Was the next word you were going to say, Johnny Neal, dreamy?
Just dreamy. I have a favorite uncle, and it's the new man from Uncle movie. Oh, my God. It was more than I expected. It was just absolutely... Are we talking about what we feel about it yet?
Did it fill you up from both ends?
It filled me up to the top like a Crystal Gale medley. Oh,
you know, this is the man from Slash Uncle, by the way.
Yeah, Johnny's actually glowing right now in what's called a refractory period.
We are talking about the new Man from U.N.C.L.E. film. I guess it's the first film since that the return of the Man from U.N.C.L.E. at some point in the 80s.
They made
in this series.
They had like the return of the Man from U.N.C.L.E. the 20 year after affair and the 15 year.
Oh, Robert Vaughn looks much better in this one.
Hey, can I just eat my hat right quick?
You said at one point it was going to be crappy.
No, I never said that. I always had faith. Now I'm going to eat my hat right now and say to everybody who's ever listened to me say, you people get a life and stop just hoping for a movie to change things for you. Well, I get it now. I get it. Mea culpa. Enjoy your Star Trek.
I've been waiting for this a long time.
We are the Unusual Suspects. I'm Chris.
JC.
Bo.
Johnny.
Joe.
And, I guess we can already see that one of us really loved this one.
Besides
for sure.
Me?
No.
I'll throw my half-eaten hat in the ring, too. I really, really love this one.
Yeah, sitting next to them in the theater, just listening to them, just thinking, the term pigs and shit comes
from. There was so much, like, that. This was, like, tailor-made. It's, like, all of these 60 tropes, like, fun Guy Ritchie action, and, like... Soup porn for days.
Oh my god.
See, I dug all the action and the spy stuff, but I mean it felt a little bit too much like you had to be really familiar with the show, which
really?
I wasn't.
Really? Yeah. I've never watched it.
Oh. Yeah, I'm very familiar with the show and it felt like that to me.
I definitely felt like this is a movie that somehow director Guy Ritchie went to the studio and went, I'll do it. But you have to let me do it exactly how I want to do it.
Yeah.
And they somehow let him say yes.
Yeah.
They've been trying to get this going for over a decade.
It's one thing that it's a period piece.
Yeah.
It's another thing that it's not a satire of period pieces on any level, and that it's filmed exactly like a film that would have come out in like the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, it is an homage, but there's nothing winky about it, even though it's really fun and lighthearted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were no Easter eggs. There was no McCallum as Mr. Waverly.
I wanted to ask you about that, because you're super familiar with the series. I've never seen it, and I'm like, if there is something in here, then it was subtle enough that I didn't feel
The one thing I, like, before I even knew what Man from U.N.C.L.E. was, my main familiarity with Man from U.N.C.L.E. is the fact that there was, in the late 80s and early 90s, there was this band in Austin that decided to call themselves Napoleon Solo, and they flyered this entire fucking town. You could, like, not turn around, like, any bathroom you went to, you'd be staring at Robert Vaughn's face. And I was like, who the fuck is Napoleon Solo? This must be a great band. And I don't think they ever played out once.
Yeah, I think my dad said the Man from U.N.C.L.E., I thought he was talking about my cousin Fred. I just assumed that's what he was talking about. It was until years later I realized it was actually a TV show that went on for what, 4 seasons?
I think it was seven.
Yeah, it was
seven seasons, and then had a spinoff, The Girl from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah, The Girl from U.N.C.L.E. was a 1 season kind of it was way too campy. Right. I kept kind of thinking that there were, I don't want to give any spoilers, but
I will say one interesting thing about Guy Ritchie writing this. I don't know if even you know this, but apparently in the books that came out, which there were like 50 or 60 books that came out. In one of them, they established that the guy that heads up the evil organization Thresh, is the son or grandson of Moriarty from Sherlock Holmes.
That's funny. Nice.
Which I thought is funny considering Guy Ritchie's directing this, and he also directed the last two Sherlock Holmes films.
Well, you know, originally, the Man from U.N.C.L.E. TV show was going to be tied in with James Bond.
Yeah, Ian Fleming was an advisor on it.
Yeah, Napoleon Solo was going to be in Dr. No. And instead they used Jack Lord as Felix.
And there was all sorts of lawsuits.
Yeah, that was just it. They kind of went, there's no way this is going to end well. So because there were two separate studios and properties. But, they didn't, the American owning did not want to be beholden to Cubby Broccoli.
But unless unless you younger listeners who are like, I honestly didn't even know this was a thing, think of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. as a Johnny Neal come lately. It really wasn't. It was a huge cultural thing.
Look up U.N.C.L.E. on eBay, and you'll see just how big of a
for
deal it was.
Decades after it seeped into like different aspects of pop culture, there were multiple comebacks to it. In fact, they had re-released season premieres and finales as movie theatrical films with added scenes of sex and violence. Yeah. That were playing in America that were very popular.
I remember as a kid, like, I was, like, super into Get Smart, and my dad would be like, well, if you like this, you should watch, like, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and I was just like, no.
No,
dad.
Seems like a lot of effort, dad.
I was kind of similar, except I did see a few on, like, Nick at Night, and I was like, I just want to do something else.
Yeah.
Like, I just wasn't in the mindset to accept it.
I know when I was a kid, there was a huge amount of options for before my time spy stuff on TV.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, The Saint, what have you, all sorts of stuff, Mission Impossible. And honestly, most of it was just kind of like, yeah, I was of an era where I was like, I just filtered that out. I was like, yeah, what's playing now?
Right.
And so I never watched it either.
Well, it had the skill of that 60s skill that the Batman show from the 60s had as well.
Okay.
And that it could entertain the parents and the kids, you know?
Yeah.
It had plenty of, by golly wow, cool gizmos that were all analog, by the way, which I loved that.
And then a shit ton of sexual innuendo.
And then a lot of very sexy chicks and sexual innuendo. And it was a good spy show with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, you know, a little bit of cheekiness. It kind of went off the rails for one season.
But where it got really campy?
Yeah, it got really campy. And that was the problem with The Girl from U.N.C.L.E., too.
Right.
It was very campy.
Yeah, and I think that was a direct reaction to Batman, with them saying, we need to make this more like Batman. And fans were like, no.
You know, you watch those old shows, and I know we're talking about the movie, but you watch those old shows, and they're just time capsules of who the character actors were. Like, on that first season, the second episode of the first season, the bad guy is Slim Pickens. You know, like, how often does that happen on Mission Impossible?
Was he riding a nuclear warhead they had to disarm?
He played a big old oil man in Iowa.
Did he say prophylactics?
But the basic idea was that in the early 60s period of the Cold War, when, of course, the Russians and Americans were, you know, at their spy-iest, a new organization pops up called U.N.C.L.E., which the idea is that they are a combined effort of multiple spy agencies when something so terrible has popped up that everybody's got to deal with
it. A combined effort of spies. I'm sorry, they were a united network command.
There you go.
For law and enforcement.
Fair enough. Hey, that spells U.N.C.L.E.
It does. You see what just happened there?
See what just happened?
I don't know if they did this in the series as well, where the two agents had previously battled each other.
No, there was never any kind of origin in those days. So just kind of got served what
in this version,
what
they
you wanted.
See Henry Cavill as Napoleon Solo, the American agent, the gentleman agent, if you will. And Army Hammer is Ilya.
I don't know. You could argue as to which is the scoundrel and which
I
is.
Well, no,
I
was just thinking
I mean,
you.
He's more of the like.
He's more dashing.
He's the dashing agent. Yes. Army Hammer plays Ilya Kuryakin.
They're kind of more of the sort of
physical agent.
They're kind of a spool. Like if you take James Bond and you split him down the middle and you give all the dash goes to Napoleon Solo and all the holy fuck this guy can really kill shit goes to Ilya.
Now I know in here I don't know if this was as well in the show that that Napoleon Solo's character was previously like an art thief, like a master thief.
That was a pretty fun concept that he stayed in Berlin with the Berlin Brigade. So you can imagine during those days, the Berlin airlifts and all that. I think if you were in the Berlin Brigade during that time, post-World War II, you'd learn how to black market stuff.
Well, I think that adds to the, like, you know, the coolness of his character, because honestly, he could not be a spy at all in a movie, just be this exact character with these exact same set of skills and just be an art thief, and you would have bought it just as
exactly.
much.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know? He's totally slick.
And he's working off he's got an indentured servitude going.
Right.
Instead of going to prison, they're like, oh, we're not going to waste these skills.
You're gonna come work for us.
This is so Con Air.
Well, when the movie starts, it's on a mission to go across the lines in Germany to basically Get Out, Alicia Vikander plays Gaby Teller, the daughter of a atomic physicist that has disappeared. And both of them are head-to-head trying to, you know...
It's a very basic, like, you would expect this out of a James Bond. It's like, it's a rocket scientist, he's an ex-Nazi, and we thought the Russians had him, but now maybe not so much. Go get his daughter. And so Napoleon Solo proceeds to wander into Checkpoint Charlie and wanders into a garage where she is a mechanic. And says, hey, we've got about 5 minutes to get you out of here because Russian agents are on the way. So unless you want to be tortured to death for the rest of the night, maybe you should go with me, which she opts to do. And they run afoul of the principal Russian agent in the climb, who is Ilya Kuryakin.
That opening scene, great. I thought it was...
It's a really tight little fun action sequence that, you know, Richie knows how to do that stuff really well, and, you know, he's pulling out all the stops.
So immediately after this, after these guys have both tried to kill each other with the vengeance, they meet up because their agencies have said, guess what, you guys got to work together now.
Right.
And it's not a meet cute.
Basically,
a public restaurant.
The idea is that her uncle is tangled up with this Italian family who has ties to Mussolini and the fascists, and is actually building they figured out a new process for enriching uranium, and they are building an atom bomb, and holy fuck, we've got to go do this. And at the same time, both of the agencies are like, yeah, you know, while you're doing that, go ahead and get her father, because he knows about this process, and get his tapes. His they say computer disc, but it's actually a reel-to-reel tape of the data, because whoever has this will have the uranium enriching process, and they will be able to rule the world.
Technology.
So if you have to,
not have repeated that plot.
So they were both told. So if you have to kill the other guy,
we're not telling you that that's part of the mission. Right. But if it comes down to it, to get that tape.
Value add. Kill away.
In the meantime, they're actually taking Alicia Vikander's character with them, because she's got to be part of the thing to get them in there, and she's got her own special kind of cool here, question.
Oh my god,
she is not a helpless female by any stretch.
Anytime you see a chick on a creeper come out from under a car, you know, it's my heart just melts. Add to it that it's her, and it's like, oh my god.
Soviet architect traveling to Rome would never dress his woman in the clothes you tried to put her in.
You try to dress her like someone on your side thinks someone dressed behind the Iron Curtain.
She's from behind the Iron Curtain.
That doesn't mean she wants to bring it with her. We need two purses, please. And every day in clutch. And grab that belt. No, not at yours. The Raban.
You can't put a Paco Raban belt on a Batuu.
She's not going to wear a Batuu.
What's wrong with a Batuu?
Nothing. If you're fat, the Dior goes with the Raban.
It won't match.
It doesn't have to match.
Have you seen the price of this handbag? It costs more than my car.
You can get back on your horse now, cowboy.
I will say she did have a bit of trouble keeping the accent.
It came in and out.
Well, it was funny that she was supposed to have a German accent.
It was
more British.
Yeah.
And she's Danish, I think. Yeah. So there's a certain Chuck Berry song in there.
It fluctuated more than not.
Yeah, that's
course,
okay.
Such a good actress,
to me, that just made it more of a movie. You know, I mean, it really was.
This
it's
movie
like,
can
I never,
do no wrong.
I never didn't feel like I was watching a movie, which is good. You know, it did all of the movie tricks right. Like, I much prefer to have the jazz soundtrack, the Euro jazz soundtrack, louder than the machine gun fire.
Yeah,
you know, I don't need to hear gunfire.
They did some really great bits here with visuals, and even like there's one scene where there's this big assault scene, and like, you know, he just kind of does all these sweep takes throughout it, and you know, odd cuts, and he's just like, all right, we're getting to the chase. We're not going to bog down in this. He plays a lot of obvious tricks in this, but he pulls them off so slickly that you're just like, wow, you must have gone to the same school that these two spies went to, because your chops are awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of getting back to sort of how you originated, because like a lot of the musical cues are similar to like what you hear in Snatch, and so
absolutely.
You kind of feel like it was back to that.
Yeah, the points where you most were like aware this was definitely not an old TV show went to movie was when there were some very well plotted out scenes that were like set pieces that used humor to set you up, you know, and you were like, okay, this is definitely a very Hollywood moment, but it's one that works so incredibly well.
And it's
like
really, they play the humor for what it's worth. They don't kill everything. There are a couple of like nod, wink, winks to the fact that these are two incredibly attractive males, like doing hardcore male bondo stuff. And, you know, they give you good, like, yeah, all right, ship away. And then they get down into it. And, I certainly, before this movie, would not consider myself the biggest Henry Cavill fan, and, man, I didn't know what to do with Armie Hammer. I don't know what to do with any man, grown man, whose name is Armie, but, man, I'm born again. The both of them blew me away in this. Really, really enjoyed seeing them work. And they've got chemistry out the ass.
Well, yeah. Cavill is still built like a brick shithouse for Superman, and it was, so he just was bursting out of those suits in a very attractive way.
Yeah.
You know, like, I did not think anything of him before this, and I'm like, okay, well, if he's given a role that's more than a Superman dimension, maybe he can do stuff. Armie Hammer, you know, bad Russian accents are fine, whatever, but I still remember the Lone Ranger.
I didn't see that.
I think he nailed the Russian accent pretty
well. Yeah, I thought he did pretty good, too.
The accent thing is interesting, too, though, because the Alicia Vikander slips in and out of it, but so, I thought, did Henry Cavill, but I didn't know if it was so much him slipping out of the accent or how accurately he was to playing the
character. I mean, he really wasn't doing an accent. He was very much channeling the Robert Vaughn character.
He was definitely doing Robert Vaughn.
And it's really good. I mean, he kind of takes this, like, you know, swagger and authority, and he's like, you know, when he's talking to Ilya, who's arguably a better spy than he is, and certainly kicks ass more, he's just like, all right, well, I'll let you along, but you mind your P's and Q's, young man.
Yeah, that's kind of why
take it like
curious.
A pussy.
Because he's very refined, like a British agent, not so much like an American. Like,
yeah,
I feel like an American would be more rude.
Well, no, the way I took it was that, well, he's always doing a character, and so when he's stopped doing a character, he can actually just be, you know, a normal person.
Okay.
Well, so, yeah, he's like, more like the con man spy.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
And it's definitely not an accent, but an affectation.
Yeah. Okay.
He's playing, laying on very thick, and it's fun. And it works because the dialogue they give him to do is good, and he's never really feels like he slips out of that character. You're always like, okay, this is who this guy is, and I wouldn't invite him to my house because he'd rob me blind. But
he would take all your gold and enriched uranium.
But I'd be glad to be his wingman at a bar.
Oh, I do like that they showed his pickpocketing skills. What? And then they don't have to keep reinforcing it. It's like, look, we've set up this baseline of what he can do. Now you can just watch him do it in action as opposed to making a point.
Yeah, and it only comes up again, like, those type of skills when it's pertinent to what's happening in the story. Like, look, I really can break into all kinds of stuff, which I liked. I don't think they went to excess of that. If I really have a complaint here at all, it's that I thought, like, there's a lot of construction going on with the way the frame is put together, with sometimes the way the soundtrack is laid in, and there were points that it felt a little wonky to me. Like, there's a point where she turns on the radio, and it goes to dance in this room to sort of somewhat try and seduce Armie Hammer's character, and it goes from, that's a radio, to, Jesus Christ, that's fucking loud, in a way that felt like nobody went in there and finessed the volume raising.
I felt that was definitely a choice that they made. Yeah, I don't think that was an accident.
No, I get. I know what you mean, but what I'm saying is I thought it jumped like awkwardly. It felt like somebody didn't quite finesse the sound editing on that.
Well, they could have at least.
We appreciate how much you finesse the sound. We get it.
Nobody's paying
me. The sound guy is very important, Chris. You're a very key member of this united command of podcast.
I'm a terrible sound editor. I'm supposed to admit it.
Oh, stop it.
But I expect more from a $75 million film is all I'm saying. And there's also moments, too, where, like, you know, there are points where the film is into split screen, and you're like, I can't even tell what's happening in some of those frames because it's too dark. You're like, why did you even bother splitting it up into a frame if it's just blackness there, pretty much? There's stuff like that. There's points that just clip too much. It almost made me feel like this is one of those work prints you see, like, the last work print before they're like, we're going to just put the final sheen onto it. No, those aren't major complaints, mind you. I just thought it was a little surprising considering this film is so slick in every other way.
Yeah, yeah, like the insertion of like the World War II footage, I was just kind of like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, that was really awkward. Like, that's wait, we know what happened in World War II, Guy Ritchie. There's, in fact, it's already been established all that stuff, so suddenly, here's a montage of newsreel footage. Oh, Hitler, I forgot about Hitler.
Oh, that guy. You know what? I took
what
that
happened
as,
to that guy?
That was still very much recent news in 1963, you know? I mean, I was able to take that.
So they didn't know about Hitler back then?
No, it's just that it was still a very real threat.
They didn't have the internet back then.
Here's the deal.
I don't know about this Hitler fellow and all his concentration camps.
But just the notion of, I mean, it's hard to remember what it was like for Berlin to be, you know, behind the wall, for West Berlin to be behind the wall, you know? I mean, that's a big deal that a lot of... I would say a lot of the people this movie's trying to target don't even have a grip.
Look, I was like, Gorbachev, tear down that wall. Mic drop. I was out.
Hugh Grant was in this just a little bit. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to see more Hugh Grant.
He plays the
British guy who's the one who gives them the orders.
And he's from the original series.
Yeah, Carson Waverly. Yeah,
This was kind of his like setup, and they were like, okay, Mr. Grant, if you behave yourself in this movie, we'll put you in the sequel.
With a bigger... Well, and actually, though, Mr. Waverly was kind of like Charlie from Charlie's... You know,
sure.
He was at the beginning and at the end. Good job, Ben.
You know? I loved him in this.
Yeah.
He's like so crisp and dismissive of the two
very,
of them.
Yeah,
and it's awesome. He's like, oh, I'm MI6, old boy. We've been doing this for several hundred years before you.
Yeah, not doing the Hugh Grant stutter. Like, that really helped a lot.
Yes, no stammering at all.
He wasn't trapped in a love triangle between two women.
I don't know how to kill this Russian.
All right, let's go to final thoughts. Start with JC.
I feel like if I go back and see this again, I'll appreciate it more because I did feel kind of beholden to, or sort of guilty almost, like not knowing enough about the show and not knowing if something was supposed to be in Eastern Europe. I was too much in my own head about it to really enjoy it because the stuff that's very Guy Ritchie about it, I like because I like Guy Ritchie movies. And I like Henry Cavill and Armie Hammer, and Alicia Vikander is awesome. I look forward to seeing more of what she does.
So was the woman who played the main villain.
Yeah, I did think that
job.
Too. How tall is she? She's like,
I know, because she was like wearing heels. She was like over Cavill, and that, just like, oh, dude, you need to play a Kryptonian.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, she's bigger than Superman. Yeah, really solid action spy movie. I had time before the screening to kill, and so I saw Mission Impossible, so I had a weird spy day today. I thought those two paired up nicely. I would give this a really solid 7 out of 10 Walther PKs.
Joe?
Well, one of the things that we talked about a bunch of different elements, but I don't think we really... bit into some of the scenery, like the sea side shots, especially when the Countess gets on the speedboat and goes off to the island, is some of the most beautiful stuff I've seen all year. And that wasn't fancy razzmatazz special effects. That was just a beautiful ocean.
Dude, when he passes out and she's on the couch behind him, holy shit.
Wow.
So there was some really great visuals in here that were practical, everything in there, for the most part, felt like, yeah, somebody, if they really set their mind to it, could do everything that was done in this movie. So I really liked that. You know, there were a few little jarring moments, like we talked about with the sound or Hitler is a dude time.
Hitler's dude time.
But other than that,
Joe's new show on the.
I will give 8.5 out of 9 cowboys because I'm still a Russian judge.
Okay.
Mention the way it was shot, just kind of looking it up. The DP is the same DP as on Gladiator, Hannibal, Matchstick Man, Kingdom of Heaven,
so,
Robin Hood, yeah.
Good DP who picked crappy movies.
Yeah. But like movies that were well shot as far as like scenery and stuff, yeah.
You know, this was like, you know, there was just a lot of sheer pleasure in this for me because it's, you know, three... things that I like a lot. A well-made Guy Ritchie film, which when he hits it, he generally is well within the wheelhouse of shit that I like. 60s style porn out the ass. Like, you know, this was like an extended Mad Men episode as far as just the sights and the feel, the style, the art design. And then a really solid 60s spy movie that didn't it never got too gimmicky. It was like, you know, well within that, you know, From Russia with Love, Bond era feel. Man, the combination of all these three, I just had a blast. I was laughing my ass off and giggling. You know, I definitely walked out of this going like, I hope this franchises it, because I definitely want to see these guys work together again.
Yeah, I thought it was like A Star Is Born, like, but a franchise is born.
I give it 9 out of 10 immaculate Seville Row suits.
Johnny Neal.
Okay, this movie...
Tuck in, people.
This movie did everything right. To include, it had the perfect budget. You know, it wasn't one of those overblown, bloated, we've got the entire world riding on this launch of a franchise. So it felt breezy, you know, yeah. like okay, this is going to start, then we're going to have a middle, we're going to have a twist, then we're going to have an end, and that's going to be fine. Unlike, say, all of the James Bond movies of the last 10 years. I have no idea what the hell's going on there. Or Mission Impossible. Never have any idea what's going on in those movies. This movie, easy to follow. Maybe I'm asking for too much that movies should be easy to follow. But this was great. It ended on time. It had wonderful style. And not only was the 60s suit and very cool dress porn so great, also, it wasn't overdone to where... If anybody wore those clothes now, you'd say, oh, you're in character. Right. You know, like even the super 60s styles of the chicks, if you're that hot of a chick, you're going to pull that off today as well. You know, I mean, it wasn't overly focused on period piece. It just did the right amount with the cars, with the clothes, with the guns, with the tech. I love that the tech was all big and clunky, you know, like the Geiger counter was... like a transistor radio kind of a thing. The characters just pulled it off so well. I had hopes that it would be following along with the TV show as it played out, but the changes that they made were great. Making Ilya into a big, strong guy instead of a cuddly little, you know, David McCallum, you know, could have been a monkey kind of guy. I thought that was a good choice. I loved it. I loved the script. I thought it was funny. I could talk all night, but I'm just going to cut it off with 10 really hot ex machina robot girls turned into 60s super spies in Pierre Cardin outfits.
I don't know how many
out of 10.
How many of those do you need?
I only need one, so I'm going to give it 10 out of 10 because that's perfect.
You know, I was thinking about while you were saying this, I think that like the difference and its period style between this and so many other movies that try and do period pieces, it's not regularly sort of winking at you, calling attention to, wasn't this inconvenient what we used to have to do? Or
yeah.
Isn't this goofy the way people used to dress without even calling it out? It just feels like a movie that was made then.
Right.
More than anything.
Quite often when a movie tries to go period, it's like everybody's wearing somebody else's clothes. They're not necessarily costumes, but the clothes are wearing the actor instead of the actor wearing the clothes. Because, like, you don't even notice the person. You just go, look at that 1955, you know, wool crepe jacket. And whereas this, everybody just looked great. Everybody looked natural.
Yeah, everybody was very comfortable in their own skin on screen in this film. Even Cavill and Hammer, who have a weird sort of a great anti-chemistry. You know, they're not supposed to like each other at all. And it works. Yeah. And you really like both of them separately. Well, I will admit, I kind of like Cavill better than Hammer. I guess it's just because I love that gentleman spy thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's really always been very appealing to me. But this certainly was a film that is going to make me want to see more stuff with these two guys together in these roles. I think that this is a movie that young folks will not take to as much. I really don't, because they're going to be expecting something a little more like the stuff we're criticizing while we're saying good stuff about this. A little brighter, a little more Mission Impossible-ier, That's not a criticism of this film at all.
They're going to be really confused by that computer disc.
I just think that they're going to find that it's slower moving than they're used to, that it's not as bright and flashy as the films they've grown used to for blockbusters. And obviously not all of them, but I think a good portion of them will. And that's a shame that this film isn't going to do as well as it probably deserves.
Really?
Yeah, I really do. I really think that you're going to get a lot of reaction. People aren't going to be going to high school seeing this coming back and telling their friends, oh, you've got to see The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Then we got to get the One of Us Army on it.
I was going to say, all of us and our friends, they'll love it. But we're older. This is a dad spy movie, if there ever was one, and there's nothing wrong with that at all.
I don't really know what people
I think you're underestimating how good looking the people in this movie are.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one,
Beaumont. Well, once again, there's good looking people in everything that comes out now, so that's not really
quite as good looking as these people.
This
was like a superpower.
Dude, kids are still going to see James Bond movies. I think they'll be fine.
Well, James Bond movies now are really good again, so there you go. But even those are more...
I like this way more than Skyfall.
I like it better than any of the games. Let me say that now.
I absolutely did not like this as much as Skyfall or Casino Royale. I think that both those films...
What
happened to you? Well, I thought they were better written, better conceived of spy movies. This is a spy comedy, ultimately, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's a good spy comedy, a really good spy comedy, but it just doesn't ever reach that level of being a really, really great one for me. I'm going to give this 7.5 out of 10 meetings to discuss sequels.
You can't see... Okay, no more seeing spy movies when you're cranky anymore.
I wasn't cranky.
You were cranky.
I was not cranky.